Hey guys, welcome back to another exciting episode of Is It Wrong, where we bring you the behind the scenes stories and discuss metal and rock and roll. And remember to hit the subscribe button on the YouTube channel. Leave us any likes and comments. Follow us on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. And remember that we are here to tell you nothing but the truth. And we look forward to hearing your messages and your comments. And today, I have a very special guest. This guy is the lead vocalist for Queensryche. He's been with Crimson Glory, and he's also done a solo album. Please welcome Todd LaTorre. Todd, how you doing?
Good, Ray. Thanks for having me.
Good, man. Good. It's exciting to have you on here, brother.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I've been looking forward to this for quite a while.
Yeah, you know, our mutual friend Brian had said to me a while back, hey, my buddy Ray wants to get you on a show. And then I think we were getting ready to go out on a long tour. And you know how it is with quietness and isolation. It's hard to find. So I'm home for a few weeks and this works out perfectly. So
that's good, man. That's good. And home is Florida. Like maybe we discussed that already.
Yep. Where you are also. Yep.
Yeah, man, that's so funny. We're like neighbors almost, you know.
I have always wanted to have a neighbor just like you. I've always wanted to live in a neighborhood with you.
Very close. few hours away.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Yeah. So, Todd, how you doing, man? How's things going with you?
They've been good. You know, we were gone for about 10 weeks. We had a couple weeks of rehearsals, and then we did two cruises. We did the Monsters of Rock cruise. And then right after that, we jumped on another cruise ship for Cruise to the Edge. Which is more of a prog, you know, like from the band Yes. And so you have bands like Marillion, Symphony X was on the ship. So they're
Wow.
Yeah. So they were, you know, more current metal band so we did those two cruises. Then we hit the road for 7 weeks and we did what was called the Origins Tour, where we played the EP and the Warning in their entirety. And so, yeah, so I was gone for a long time and I'm home now. And I'm literally doing nothing. I'm spending time with my wife and our dog. I'm seeing my mom, my sister, binging Netflix and trying to find motivation to, you know, do other things that probably need to be done, like cleaning up in the garage, and my studio is kind of a mess and that kind of thing. But, you know, I'm off for 3 weeks and then we have some fly dates for now. But yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Actually, I just saw your studio a minute ago. It actually looks pretty cool, pretty clean to me. I mean, with the exception of all the ganged up instruments, right?
Yeah. Well, we did a bunch of rehearsals here, and then we did our pre-production in Tampa, where we have like all of the drum risers, all the lighting, our lighting, and you know, a big PA, and that's where we run through everything like we're really doing a show. But to work everything out, you know, we did about 12 days or so, almost 2 weeks here. And so the drums and I had to take my drums down, and, you know, there's a bunch of gear in there, and all of our fly gear that we use for all of our in-ears and our belt packs and our Kempers and all of our stuff. So my studio was packed full of Queensryche gear. So I haven't put it back together since we left.
Yeah. I'll tell you a funny story. You know, we recently played with you guys and I was looking for a mic stand because I couldn't find a mic stand. I asked your stage manager. I'm like, hey, man, is there a mic stand I can use? He goes, yeah, there's some in the back. And I saw one back there, and I grabbed it, and I adjusted it and set it all up and everything. And we were doing sound check, and your guy came up and said, hey, you grabbed Todd's mic stand. What the? And he just, like, was going off. I'm like, yeah, dude. I'm like, oh, wow. He goes, you guys ain't allowed to touch any of that crap. We saw all your in-ear packs. And it, I mean, it was all good, but I was like, whoa, dude, sorry, man, you know?
Don't touch those! Don't you ever touch my balls without asking.
Hey, if I would have seen you do that, I would have said, yeah, go ahead, no big deal.
Yeah. But
some people are really finicky with where everything is set and done and don't touch it.
Yeah.
But I apologize if somebody like went off on you, because normally, you know, we don't operate that way. We always try to be very respectful. So sorry about that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you know what?
We don't even, we half the time we're not there. You know, we don't even need to sound check most of the time. We do our sound guy will do virtual sound checks. And so he'll dial in everything from a show file or, you know, and he can test my, like, if we've had recording, we record every show that we do.
Oh, wow.
Put a live record out or do video. We always have multi-track recordings going for everything. And so sometimes for virtual sound checks, he can pull up a show and check all the vocals, all the backing vocals, and all the drums that are there, and he can get levels and pretty much dial it in, and we don't even need to be there. And then he'll just do minor tweaking on the first song or two, and then we're pretty much set.
Yeah, that's what we noticed, man. He hit the guitar, hit the bass, mic line two, hit the snares, nothing but line checks.
Yeah.
And we're like, all right, when's the band going to come out? And then all of a sudden he goes, okay, we're done. And we're like, what? It totally blew me away. But you know what? You're a touring band and you have the same sound guy, same gear, and it's all your gear and it's all labeled, and he knows your levels, he knows everything. So it made it for us just mind blowing that you could do that.
Well, you know, and you know, we're on like our in ear. So like I use my cell phone. The other guys have tablets.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do all of our own in ears. We don't have a monitor guy anymore where we're going, hey, up, down, this, that. And I'm blind.
Without
my sunglasses that are prescription, I can't see far away. So if I needed a vocal up or down or anything, to go look to somebody on the side and squint to see if they're looking at me and then go up, we don't do that. So we're completely self-contained. And I don't even think I've adjusted anything on my mix other than maybe the drums, if the state, depending on the stage, sometimes the snare might be loud. And I have the top mic, bottom mic of the snare, every drum mic on my mix, overheads, the guys, I have, you know, Michael panned hard left, Stony hard right. I have Eddie all the way around. I have the drums all the way around. We play with a click because a lot of times we used to use a lot of video. And so I just adjust the drum overall because I have them in groups. So I literally just look at my phone and I might turn one little thing up or my mic up or down a little, and then I walk away and I don't touch it again. So there's really nothing for us to really adjust. You know, we get our belt, we get our wireless packs. I turn mine on and I just have them play, and then I adjust the volume where I want it that night, and then that's it. So yeah, it's really, really easy. And you know, to be honest, it makes it, because we're used to that, it's kind of a little easier when you do festivals or throw and goes where you don't get
sound.
And so we're kind of used to just, hey, our in-ears sound good. We don't use wedges or anything. So we're so used to what we hear in our ears. As long as that's good for us, it's not really that necessary for us to do a sound check if our sound guy has a pretty good baseline, you know.
Right.
Kind of sick,
no, that's definitely the way to go. Unfortunately for us, we don't always have that opportunity. You know, we just did a show in Germany. but
Keep It True.
Keep It True, yeah. And
I played that festival before when I was in Crimson Glory, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And you know, I mean, you get like a 10-minute sound check and it's like, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. We weren't even allowed to use our in-ears.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, the guy said, "No, we don't have time to dial in your in-ears." And we're like, "We can do it ourselves."
Yeah.
And he's like, "No, we don't have time for that." I was like, "Well,
that sucks."
Yeah, so we had to go with wedges, bro.
And you know when you're used to in-ears,
mm-hmm.
you just it's easier on your voice, you pitch better, you have the freedom to move around.
Yeah.
Let's say your guitar player on stage left doesn't have you in his mix. Maybe mm-hmm. he just wants a little bit of you, but a lot of his guitar, for example. You go to sing over there, and unless you can hear the mains or the side fills, if they have mm-hmm. side fills, you don't know how you're singing.
Yeah.
That's and feedback and that sucks.
Yeah,
but you know what? You power through it, and you just sometimes you're like, okay, we have some things up against us, and you dig a little deeper.
Yeah, man. Yeah. You know, what's really cool is there was, I don't know, 25 bands or whatever. And we had so many people tell us, dude, you guys were the best band of the festival and your voice is the best. And we're like, you know what? We didn't come here for that, you know, to blow away everybody else. We just came to do what we came to do, you know, which was great, you know, but, and you know,
well, I show up to blow everybody else away.
Yeah. And you do.
Oh, you know what? And that festival in particular, because I know Oliver, who's runs the festival.
Yeah.
You know, these are like real purist. It's a very purist. And he really kind of specializes and caters to bands that are more cult followed, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe he has some more well-known bands, but
right.
bands that were really special in their own way, but maybe they weren't these huge, huge bands, but they were very impacting in the genre. So you get a lot of the cult followed, and they're diehards at that festival. I mean,
bro, you are not kidding.
They're really diehard fans there, and very dedicated to that metal. And and I think it's really great that he has that festival for bands that otherwise might not get to play for a bigger audience. You know, some of these bigger festivals, you know, you're playing at 12 o'clock and
yeah,
or you're not even on the festival. So he really likes booking bands that are like, oh, I never heard of them before, but wow. Then you YouTube them or whatever. And you're like, holy crap, these guys are great. Why did I never hear of them? They kind of were under the radar a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Crimson Glory is a perfect example. You know, I mean, if you're into that style and you know the band, if you like them, you probably really, really like them. But so many people never heard of that band. But for that festival, everybody knew every word. Just like with your band, they probably were like, oh my gosh, I get to see these guys in the flesh after all these years. And it's a really special event.
Yeah. Yeah. What's really cool is there was a lot of guys that were not Christians that had all our records.
Yeah.
And came up and said, hey man, I'm not a Christian, but man, I love your music. I love you guys. And that's, I heard you say, or I read something where you said that, you know, you and Michael did that song, right? And I read somewhere that you said that the great thing about you guys collaborating on that song was the fact that it showed how two guys with different beliefs can get together and write a great song.
Yeah.
And do something, you know, it's a mutual respect. You know what I'm saying? We're not here to shove anything down your throat, and you're not here to shove, you know, I'm a Christian, you're an atheist. We're friends, man.
Yeah, that's it.
We're doing this podcast.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it's a thing of, I think, like you said, just a mutual respect. It's a beautiful thing when you can do that, you know?
Well, I agree. And thank you. And I told Michael when he asked me for that, I was like, you know, you sure? I said, I know how your audience can be, and people can chastise and criticize, you know, why would you work with a, you know, an atheist or an anti-theist, somebody that's completely, you know, opposite of. And I said, you might get a little backlash for that, because I have no problem speaking about my position or why. Mm-hmm. But he was like, no. And I said, you know, I think it's better. You could have got another well-known Christian singer to do that, but that's kind of easy. I think it's cool when you get somebody else. And not only that, you know, it's a song about the resurrection.
Right.
You know, which I don't believe in either.
Right.
But people would say to me, how could you sing that song when you don't believe? I said, well, I love Stryper. I mean, I can sing those songs. Christ is the lover of your soul, and he wants to give you so freely surrender. I know all of that stuff, and I love it, and I sing it with so much happiness and passion. I just love the music. So I can identify with the people that maybe aren't Christians or whatever, and they love what you're singing. They love the songs. They sing along, and it's not so much, even though, let's say that there's a message in your music, you know, they just love it in their own way. And I guess that's better than saying, I don't like the message they're singing about, so I'm going to discredit all of it.
There you go.
I told my people, I said, I view it as, I'm honored to do something with Michael Sweet. I grew up loving Stryper, and I'm going to sing it with the most conviction that I can, in the same way that an actor could play a rapist or a murderer or a bad guy. And you're really not that, but you are playing a role, and you're doing it the best job that you know how as an artist. That's how I approached it.
Right.
And I said to Michael, I go, the question is, Michael, will you sing my lyrics on my record?
And what did he say?
He goes, I don't know. And I said, just so you know, I would never put you through that. I said, but what could be interesting is if we had an intellectual, philosophical, not a debate, but we could play either role in a dialogue through music about our positions. And maybe there's a meeting of the minds somewhere. We just, you know, but there doesn't have to be a good versus evil, because I'm not evil. And I don't, you know, but it could be an interesting dynamic lyrically with a great message.
Right.
There could be something there. And I always thought that would be a fun concept to do.
Yeah.
Where you challenge, you know, there's a dialogue in the lyrics where maybe this side, the theist side says, hey, you know, but what about this? And don't you want to be in heaven for eternity? And then I say, well, what about this? And there's just this little push and pull and back and forth, but kind of a nod to each side for championing their own position, but in the end, you find a common ground.
Right.
And I think that's what was important about, about doing that song was, hey, we can show that despite our differences and how we see things, we can still be really good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while we don't agree with each other's side, for example, we respect the right of that person to believe what they do, so long as it isn't infringing on my rights, and I'm not trying to impose or infringe on your rights.
Right.
So I think that was, I don't know, kind of the takeaway for me. And look, I thought it was a cool song.
Yeah.
So, I loved all of the, we talked earlier for the people that are, that are watching this for the first time. We spoke a little earlier to test this out, to make sure my signal was good. And then I said, I did know of your band, and that I also listened to Stryper and Baron Cross, and I had friends that listened to Bloodgood and Petra and what was it? Was it White Cross?
Yeah, White Cross.
White Cross. So see, I'm not completely out of the loop on some of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was funny because I asked you. You said to me that you knew you some about me being an iconic singer or whatever. You said, I said, man, you've never even heard of us until we did that show with you. And you're like, yeah, I have. I actually have. You know what's funny is I told my wife you said that. She goes, you sure you're talking to Todd LaTorre from Queensryche? I'm like, yeah, babe. So I played her that test recording that we did.
Yeah.
She's like, wow, cool.
Yeah. Look, I could just rattle these names off. I didn't know. I mean,
yeah.
And I still love that stuff. I still put on, you know, Yellow and Black Attack or Against the Law, or I put on State of Control or Atomic Arena for Baron Cross.
Like, oh yeah, Baron Cross. Yeah,
love,
man.
Love that stuff. So
yeah.
But I mean, your voice, geez, man, you know, incredible singer. And then man, I was telling you about the progressive elements to your band that was way more complex than a power chord metal band. You know, you guys had a lot more very Queensryche style, kind of that progressive metal, mm-hmm. but with real singing, you know, and like these vocal acrobatics that you would do. And like, I think it's awesome.
You know,
and that you're still doing it today with such clarity in your voice. I mean, we were in the venue when you were playing, and there was like a little, I don't know if you remember, there was a catering thing upstairs.
Yes, yes.
And so I was looking down to my left, down at the stage, and I was watching and, you know, listening to the vocals, especially, because that's,
sure,
know,
yeah.
And I was like, damn, this guy's awesome. You know, like you were just delivering it live, and it was an awesome show. You guys sounded great. And
appreciate that, man.
I'm sorry that we didn't get hang time, you know.
Yeah,
but if we get to do it again, you know, it would be great to get more hang time, go to dinner, and you know, get to hang out more.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, we'd in fact, your guitar player had talked to Bruce and told him, man, you guys were great, we'd love to do more shows with you. At the time, we didn't have management because we were just getting back into it.
Sure,
now we do. So we, you know, maybe we can connect our manager with your manager or your booking guy and do some shows. Yeah. I'd love to play with you guys, man.
Yeah.
Queensryche really, in a roundabout way is what Sacred Warrior started out like, because we, you know, I would watch you guys. Of course, Jeff was with him at the time, but listening to the music, and then we'd start writing stuff. And I just totally had that Queensryche vibe because I love the style. Yeah. I love the vocals, and me having that kind of vocals, I was like, man, I want to pattern myself after that. If you notice, we were alike in the style, but we weren't Queensryche clones.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of bands I've heard that are Queensryche clones, and they're not that good.
Yeah.
You know, and I say that to say that Queensryche ultimately was the root for Sacred Warrior starting in our style.
Yeah, but you mold and form your own sound.
Correct.
You're not trying to copy how Jeff sang, but let's say you appreciated, you know, the phrasings or the tonal aspects, or, you know, just a lot of, there's a million things you can go through on not being too wordy in choruses and having that,
right.
that hook and that catch. But again, I mean, just musically, if we take the vocals out of it, again, there's more guitar, there's more things going on. Your drummer's doing interesting things. It's not a meat and potatoes.
Right. Thing.
That's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, no, I much appreciate
more,
that.
More complex than just, you know, a generic power metal band, for example.
Right, right. Yeah. No, and we try, man. And we I don't know if you guys ever do, but we always have these we call them back to Jesus meetings where we're working on writing and this guy's not agreeing with that guy and this and that. And all of a sudden we're like, wait, hold it. We need to talk. And then a 3-hour rehearsal turns into an hour and a half because we spent an hour and a half talking, you know? That's one of the questions I was going to ask you in writing. What's it like writing with Queensryche versus your solo album? Because I know with Queensryche, you have a group of guys and with your solo album, it's only two of you, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean,
Gosh, they're completely different animals. You know, I mean, I play guitar as a songwriter, as a songwriter. So, but when I would get with Craig, and if I had a riff in my head, I would say, "Hey, do this, you know, this more thrashy kind of a thing." Whereas on the next record, I'm thinking of more open chords and more space and a little less palm muted riffing thing. But anyway, if there's a riff I hear and I'm like, done, keep it, let's move on to the next part. And in Queensryche, there's other people that are like, you know, what if you tried it this way? And so one idea can get tried or worked 10 different ways. And a lot of the times it ends up going back to the original way.
Oh, wow.
You know, so a lot of times it's like, you know, we'll try this and try that and we'll track that and listen, and you go, you know, I think I'm still kind of liking that original way. And everyone's like, yeah, me too. But it's just a lot longer process, for, in my opinion, you know, to write and record a Queensryche album. It's a completely different thing. I mean, I love it in one sense, because you do have all of these ideas that are interesting. And on the other hand, you know, sometimes it's like, it can be exhausting because there's so many ideas, and it's like, if two guys like something but three guys don't, or they're not crazy about it, how do you decide on what you're going to keep and what you're not going to keep? So sometimes we relinquish that, or we'll kind of give our producer that authority to say, hey, this is what I think and why I think it, and maybe he's the decider on something, you know, if we're kind of like not agreeing on something. But then again, you have to say, you're not going to get everything that you want on a record,
right?
You're going to, if you can get 85%, 90% of everything that you wanted, that's successful regarding all of those things as a band. Because, you know, I might think something's awesome and let's keep that. And then maybe Michael and Eddie are like, I don't know if I like that idea as much. And I'll say, really, man, this just sounds perfect to me. And everybody hears things differently, and it's so subjective. And when the record's done, as you know, when people hear it for the first time, they don't know the eight other ways that we tried it. They only know the one way that you served it to them. And if they just like it, you go, oh yeah, but remember when we tried it this way? I wonder if that would have been received better or worse, or, you know.
Oh yeah,
so they're different animals. I mean,
let me ask you this.
Yeah,
who's more? I really want it this way. Is it more Eddie, or is it more Michael, or is it a little bit of both, or, you know, like when they have their idea in the head?
I mean, everyone's pretty open-minded and cool with feedback that might not be the most favorable. So if it's like, I don't really like that, and, you know, that's a hard one to answer, because, you know, I think Michael might be a little easier to bend. I mean, so Eddie bends a lot too. I mean, we all do. I would say I'm probably I'm very open-minded, but man, when my mind is set on a certain thing, I will push and push and push and push. If I have my convictions about why this vocal thing, for example, and it's like, yeah, I don't know. And I get pushback when I really love something, I make a stink about it, and I'll go to the end to try to get what I wanted on that. And again, it's only coming from a place of, I think this serves the song really well.
Right.
But then again, there's times where I've done that and I've been outvoted on an idea, and there'll be another idea that maybe I end up settling into, and I go, you know, this is cool, I like this. In the back of my mind, I go, I still think the other one was cooler, but I will go with this, you know, because we're a team, and that kind of thing. But again, it's I'm very vocal with my opinions, and that's just the way that I am. But everyone is so cool to work with in the band. I mean, I might have a drum part and I'll show Casey like, "Hey dude, what do you think of this?" And he'll take it, or maybe he'll build on that idea, or maybe he'll say, "Yeah, I'm kind of really sticking with this right now." I'll say, "Okay, no problem." I've shown Michael guitar parts that have, you know, been in songs, you know, you know, they have vocal ideas for me. If I'm stuck, I'll lean on Eddie first for a vocal. I'll say, "Hey, I got nothing on this verse or this bridge, this pre-chorus. I need it to lift. And can you help me come up with something cool?" And he'll go, "Yeah." And he'll spit three or four ideas at me, and they're all usually pretty good, you know? So he's really good with the vocal melody thing, and, you know, so, but they're my stuff's really fun, 'cause I'm in control, and I get to do whatever I want, regardless of what anybody else thinks. 'Cause there isn't anybody else except for Craig. And at the end of the day, it's still my record.
Mm-hmm.
But Queensryche is a very special thing too. And, but yeah, they're, gosh, apples and oranges, you know, you could probably find pros and cons for both sides easily.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, so take me back to the beginning, man. I'm sure you've been asked this a million times. How did this whole thing come about where you were able to audition for Queensryche? How did that come? How did Jeff's leaving bring Todd in? How'd that all happen?
All right. I'll give you the really short condensed version, the Cliff Notes version.
Yeah.
I met Michael Wilton at the NAMM show in California, at a Seymour Duncan dinner party. My buddy Tom was a guitar player in John Oliva's Pain, and he was a Seymour Duncan artist, and he had a plus one for this dinner. So I went to the dinner. Michael Wilton was there. I saw him at the buffet thing. I'm putting food on my plate, struck up a little, "Hey, blah, blah, blah." We ended up, I invited him to come sit at my table. We could finish talking about whatever. I did not know that there was trouble with them. And I told him, you know, I sing in a band called Crimson Glory, but I'm also a drummer first, and I'm pretty versatile with my voice. He told me he was doing some music on the side for like TV stuff, little like sports reels and different things. And, he asked if I could sound like Chris Cornell.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I mean, I can do some things that sound decent, you know?
Yeah. But
anyway, so he asked for my info, and then, like, I got home 2 days later, and there was an email from him. He had checked out live stuff that I did with Crimson Glory, and he said, "Wow, you remind me of, like, a young Bruce Dickinson, Jeff Tate kind of a singer." And I said, "Well, it's kind of my wheelhouse, and those are two singers. Why I sing in the style that I sing. They were hugely influential. The operatic, the big vibrato, and you know, whatever." So he emailed me four songs, and I said, "These don't sound like sports reel stuff." And I said, "This sounds like Queensryche. Like there was no singing. There was just song with no vocals." And I was like, And so I asked him, "Should I, I don't know if you're granting me creative freedom to do whatever, but of the four songs you sent, I kind of really like just the one. And this is the one that I'm favoring." He never replied. And I said, I'm just going to record. I'm going to write over this song and I'll send it back to you. And you tell me what you think. And so like the next day I wrote everything on it and I recorded it. I didn't spend every little detail to get everything just, you know, I did.
Of course, yeah.
I was like, "This is real. This is what I did." And it was a song called "Don't Look Back" that came out on the first record I did with the band. Ignorance of you, the pawns of corporate greed, the raping of our sacred earth, the planting of a seed, a revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And he really liked it. And he was like, hey, could you do like, you know, some recordings with of our old stuff? And I said, yeah. I think I might have even done Queen of the Reich before I met him. But I did like Child of Fire and Eyes of a Stranger. And there was a couple songs that I did. And I said, here you go. And he was really impressed. And then the next thing I know, I had some conversations with him. And he was like, hey, look, Jeff has kind of shelved the band. He's promoting his solo tour. And so we don't really have anything on the books. We had like two shows left. And, you know, what if we did a side project and we called it something else, but it's just doing all the old Queensryche stuff. And then we can try to play some shows until Jeff comes back. And then, you know, Queensryche would be Queensryche again. And I, at the time I was like, holy shit. Like, these are the guys from Queensryche. Even though it's not called Queensryche, like, I can't believe this even happening. And so we called the band, originally it was called West, and it stood for Wilton, Eddie, Scott, and Todd.
Mm.
And then I remember thinking West sounded a little bland. And then we thought, well, because you guys are from the West Coast, the Pacific Northwest, maybe Rising. So we all came up with Rising West. And that's how the name was. So wow. Michael showed me showed those guys what I had done on some of those Queensryche songs, and then I ended up having phone calls and emails and phone calls with everybody, and then basically we booked two shows at the Hard Rock in Seattle, and they both sold out. And then we had a bunch of they had a bunch of merch made. I never jammed one note with the guys.
Wow.
And we already had, and it went on online that the members of Queensryche minus Jeff have this thing called Rising West with two shows Friday and Saturday or whatever at the Hard Rock in Seattle. So of course everybody's like, whoa. I think this is right when you know what hit the fan in Brazil.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
I think he had enough. And right. I think that's when he put out, this is what we're doing. So I flew to Seattle and we rehearsed at Scott's house, the drummer. And and they were like, we're all in a room. And I was like, wow, I can't believe I'm in it was in his garage. It was an electric drum kit. We were all in, and I was like, they're like, well, hey, we know all the songs. What do you know? And I said, well, not to sound disrespectful, but I really kind of only know up to Empire. Anything past Empire, I couldn't name one song. I said, I've heard Promised Land. I had Tribe, so I know like one or two songs from that. But like really, the Warning is my favorite record. Obviously, I know all of Mind Crime. Mm-hmm. Not my favorite album, but, you know, they said, what do you want to start with? Because it'll be easier for us to play what you know. I said, let's start out with Queen of the Reich. And they were like, they kind of looked at each other like, you want to try that first? I go, yeah, let's do it. And I was still in Crimson Glory at the time. So, you know, my range was conditioned. I was singing to the stratosphere.
Oh, yeah.
And I could yawn Queen of the Reich. It was so easy. And so we did Queen of the Reich, and, you know, it was killer. And they kind of looked at each other like, all right. And I said, how about Child of Fire? And we did Child of Fire.
That's my favorite song.
Yeah. And
love that song.
So we went through all of that. And then we played those two shows. And then there was more turmoil in the band. Again, I was not aware of the extent of the problems that were happening.
It was deep.
It was deep. And so, so the next thing I know, and by the way, the whole time this Rising West thing's happening, I remember saying, wow, I can't believe I'm playing. If I only do the two shows, like, that's the coolest thing I'll probably ever do in my musical career. And I'm so grateful. And I made relationships with the guys in Queensryche. Like, I can't, this is amazing. But wouldn't it just be ridiculous if it said Queensryche, you know? And and then after we did those shows, there was a huge buzz. Wow, this guy, blah, blah, blah. And so next thing I know, he's fired. And I'm on Billboard.com as the new singer for Queensryche. And I remember going right to Queensryche Wikipedia to see what was, and it said current members, and there was my name. And I was like, is this really happening?
Mind-blowing, right?
Am I really the singer of Queensryche? Is this true? And I remember laying on the couch, and I would have like a VH1 Classic on when they had the metal show and all that. And I remember it was like 3 a.m. and I had fallen asleep on the couch. And I remember cracking my eyes and looking, and like, I think the Jet City Woman video was on the, you know, they're playing the old videos like Warlock and Queensryche and all this stuff. And I look and there's Queensryche, and I'm kind of groggy and I'm not thinking. And I go, I'm like, I know that guy. I'm like, I got his phone number. And then I see, you know, the next guy, I'm like, I know him too. In my head, I know him too. And then I'm kind of watching the video like a fan from when I was looking at the show on your t-shirt, Headbangers Ball.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then it hit me. I was like, I'm in this band. This is nuts. And so it's just been insane, dude, because I played in bands as a drummer my whole life. And you reach a certain age and you think, it's never going to happen. There's really no scene here. I don't know anybody in the business. It's just, you know, it's a pipe dream. It's never going to happen. And I had an upholstery business for 20 years or more.
I knew that.
And I just thought, you know, and then that happened. I was 38 years old. I think I was 38 when that happened. And I just couldn't believe it. And then all these opportunities open. And now I'm playing with guys that I watched on MTV, and then they're looking at me, and I'm kind of this new face because everybody, you know, they have all known each other for so long. And I'm like, man, I know all these people as a fan, but, and now there's, you know, maybe they're not that it matters, but we're headlining a show, and, you know, this other band that I loved is playing before, like they're opening for us. And I get to meet them, and are they viewing me as just some new guy, like brushing me off? Are they going to view me as a peer? Are they going to, in 12 years later and 4 records in with Queensryche, you know, I've developed some really meaningful friendships. I've got to meet a lot of people that are really cool. And it's a small, small, small community. And that's, I know I said I'd give you the short version.
No, that's okay.
That is kind of a short version, to be honest. It's hard to, I could say I met him at NAMM and he heard what I did and he liked it. No. And it's like, well, I have questions. So that's how I got into the band. They never held rehearsals for Queensryche looking for a new singer. I happened to just meet this guy at a buffet. And not only that, I'm a huge fan of Testament. And I just watched Testament play at the Grove the night before. So when Michael was at the thing, because he's kind of a short guy, so yeah. Am I. And Eric Peterson, who's the guitarist in Testament, he's a short guy too. When I went up to the thing, I had a total brain fart, but I thought for a moment that was Eric Peterson from Testament. Because I wasn't staring at him, but I looked and I saw who he was, and I'm putting food on my plate, and I said, And he kind of looked at me, and I go, hey, great show last night. And he goes, huh? And I looked at him, and I go, what? He's like, I go, yeah, last night. And I looked at him, and I go, sorry, dude. I mistook you for somebody else. I totally know who you are. You're with Queensryche. Lifelong fan. Sorry. and then we got to talking, and I'm like, he had a drink in his hand, and I had a plate of food. And I was like, I go, hey, I'm really hungry and I want to go eat. I'd love for you, if you want, you can come sit at my table. It's me and one guy. We're not going to bother you. But if you want to continue the convo, you're welcome to come sit at my table and we can talk. And he kind of stood there and he was like contemplating and he goes, all right. And so he came over and sat down and I don't know, we sat down for maybe 30, 45 minutes and that was it. The rest was email, phone call, and the two Rising West shows, some stuff. He had seen that I did stuff live and then I got in the band and then that was it.
Yeah. And you know, it's neat with that one comp, with this little story you shared with me, you answered a bunch of my questions because I was going to ask you what was really the audition like and what was your first show like and what's the crowd reaction like? And all of those are encompassed in this one little story you're telling me, which is really awesome, man.
Yeah, there wasn't, I mean, we already had shows booked. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't even necessarily say it was an audition.
Right.
They put all their trust in Michael vouching for me and the stuff that the recordings that he could show them that I did of the old Queensryche stuff and then live stuff that I did with Crimson Glory. And that was it. And it was really time for me to not let Michael or myself down now that I'm standing in his garage, you know, going, okay, now sing Queensryche songs.
Yeah.
Okay, let's play. And I was able to deliver. When we played the show, I was quite nervous because I know what they're expecting. I go back now and I look at how I moved and did some things, and it's a little, you know how it is when you're kind of starting. And I think they were really impressed with everything being played in standard tuning, which we play in standard tuning, just like the recordings.
Yeah.
We don't down tune. And that, I mean, the truth of the matter is Jeff wasn't hitting any of those high notes for a couple decades.
Right. Okay?
And so here comes this guy wailing these high notes they haven't heard in years. Mm-hmm. And not that that means you're a good singer. That's like one baby aspect. But, you know, those are the things that people latch on to. Oh my God, he hit the high note. Okay. Well, there's everything in between that really matters.
Yeah. But
you know, I mean, and Jeff was so awesome, you know, on those recordings, there's this standard that you feel like they're going to hold you to. And they do.
Sure.
You know, even to this day, it's like, I still get, you know, ridiculed for stupid stuff, but, I think that the overall fan reception was like, wow, this band looks like they're invigorated and they don't look bored and they're just going through the motions again. And, you know, so I think that excited a lot of people. And the fact that I'm more of a metal guy, I'm a metal guy. So I don't want to play another Rainy Night. I want to play Reich. You know, I don't want to I would rather do Roads to Madness and not Silent Lucidity.
Right.
They're great songs, but coming for as a metal guy, I always gravitate toward that early stuff and not the poppy commercial stuff.
Yeah. You know, I think for me, the even more than Jeff not being able to hit those high notes was the way he was phrasing things and his diction and the way he changed so much, it just took the feel away from the songs, you know. And so like for me, here comes Todd LaTorre, and I'm thinking to myself, so did Todd bring it up a notch, or is he just on stage trying to fill Jeff's shoes? And in my opinion, bro, I think you brought it up a couple of notches, because one, you can hit the notes for sure, but you're great. Your stage presence is great. Your phrasing is great. And you have your own style, but you still cover the Jeff Tate songs well enough where people can listen to them and go, oh, heck yeah. Now, the only complaint I do have about you guys when we play with you guys are the loudest freaking band we've ever heard live, ever. I was like, I had earplugs in, and I'm like, ah! Your sound, man. Oh, my gosh.
Hold on. I agree with you. So our sound guy,
he's deaf.
He slams the hell out of systems. Now, I'm the kind of guy where, and I've had people say it hurt my ears. I needed earplugs. I've heard people complain that it was too loud. And then, but then I've asked other people like, hey, was it too loud? And they're like, it was really loud, but that's how I think it should be. And I'm like,
yeah,
I always say to our sound guy before every show, what's the dB limit tonight? And it'll be like, you know, 103 or 10, you know, or whatever. And I'll go, dude, don't kill him. And he always laughs at me. And I go, I'm serious. I said, listen, I would, if something's too loud, I said, I shouldn't have to wear earplugs to attend a show.
Right.
I shouldn't have to. I said, number two, it's good to be loud where they feel that and it's powerful. But when it's too loud, it's not pleasing. People are going to want to leave. I said, and I would rather it be quieter and just sonically awesome than to that too loud where it's like, you know, you guys sounded awesome, but it was a little punishing.
Yeah.
And I think sound guys in general, I think their ears, they're so used to pumping, and what's loud to them is totally different than the average person that isn't doing this night after night, that comes to a show, you know, loud, you know, that's it's pumping to me is, you know, that's loud. To our sound guy, it's like, if, you know, I'll be like, how was it tonight? He's like, you know, 103 decibels or 105, you know, I'm like, dude, you know, and they'll be like, nah, man, you know, and he loves just, and I've heard what you've said so many times. It's actually a thing where I say every show, please don't kill them. Just, can you, you know, make sure it's loud and it sounds good, but not punishing.
Right. Right. And I will say
it was, you see, I don't like that because it's like, man, I know the song that it sounds really good, but I had to wear earplugs and I don't want somebody to have to need to wear those to me. I don't like that. And I wear them anyway for protection.
Right.
Just because I have tinnitus anyway. But yeah, I don't know what to say other than I know exactly what you're talking about.
Todd, I will say this. Even though it really did hurt your ears.
He's an awesome sound guy, by the way.
But he is. Volume. That's what I was going to say. He had you guys dialed in so good. Yeah. My wife and I, you know, the bleachers in the back there, my wife and I were sitting there watching you guys, and I've got it on video. I'll send you a couple of them where you guys are playing. And I just look at my wife and I put the camera on my arm and I had goosebumps and I'm like, babe, just wow, man. Just wow. Just blown away by you guys. Your voice, the sound, your sound man dialed you guys in beautifully, bro. I mean, no complaints there. And like I said, every freaking song, I was like, oh my gosh, bro, I'm jonesing on you here. Okay.
No, that's good. That's good to hear. I'm glad.
Yeah. Man.
Aside of the punishing volume, I'm glad that you had a good time watching the show.
Oh yeah, man. No, incredible, man.
And that you or other people are able to say, hey, look, that's not the original guy that I grew up listening to.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, I mean, I think that I'm able to capture the essence of, okay, that's how they should sound. But I'm not trying to do every tiny, tiny single little. I do gutturals on some stuff,
right?
You know, and screaming in digital, I'll do a fry scream, you know, and then I do a deep because I like that stuff.
Yeah.
Some people say that's not Queensryche. Well, I'm doing it on this song, you know. But I'm also like me too, you know. So it's this weird balancing act where you're like, hey, this is how I sing. But I also sing in the style that the music makes me want to sound like.
Of course.
That's more like Slayer. I don't know. And I'm writing an original piece. I'm probably not going to sing it like a Queensryche thing because the attitude is not the same.
Right, right.
So, yeah. But, yeah, that was a really fun show. And I mean, you guys definitely threw down and did your thing, and you know, it was cool.
Yeah, yeah. So hey, let's talk about your solo project, Rejoice in the Suffering.
Yeah.
There's a song on there, Crossroads to Insanity. I watched that video. Stuck inside these four walls. Still talking round in circles, feeling so alone. My body sits in tears. Yeah. Bro. Initially, I'm thinking Mind Crime, the nurse, the whole, you know. But then as I'm watching it, I'm like, that's nothing like Mind Crime.
Oh, you know, I never even thought of that.
Yeah. Time to go. Yeah, not time. That's
yeah. Funny, but, I don't even remember the video to that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Perhaps you need another shot.
Yeah, I remember that.
Sweet dreams, you bastard. Remember that? Yeah. But it's funny because I'm watching that and I'm totally thinking Mind Crime. But then as I'm watching the video, I'm like, man, this is nothing like, bro. I gotta ask you, where was that filmed at?
So that was filmed at a friend's house. So,
come on.
Yeah, I have a friend. I mean, it's one of their houses. This house is like 25 or 28,000 square feet.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, they have like two elevators. And then so then they own the house next door to that. That's probably another 5,000, 6,000 square feet. And that's basically a storage house. It's a gorgeous house in a gated community. And while they were building this ridiculous size house, they were living in that house. That was their house. Then they bought two or three lots and built this. It's like a hotel. I mean, and so when I'm being pushed in the wheelchair, if it's kind of outside, that's on the backside of their house where the pool is.
Oh, wow.
Corridor.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm inside actually outside, I think is where I'm pushing the nurse. That's
right.
That's out back. But their garage is, you know, I don't even know how many cars, but it's all cinder block. And I was like, okay, this looks institutional. And they have a couple doors to rooms. So we, Craig made some things to block out or to make it look like they were patient rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy that works for them who does all kinds of handiwork for them, his name's Greg. He's the guy pushing me in the wheelchair. Now this is also when people weren't really shooting. It was during COVID.
So
my mom, who will be 82 this year, my mom is the nurse that has the pills.
Yeah.
One of my
pills that ended up on the floor.
Yeah. My sister's in the video who is like doing this weird, she's crawling on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, and then my buddy Aaron is in the video. My dog Vader, who's, I think he's in the room with my wife, the owner of the house is the blonde with the crazy hair, and she's kind of laughing. Wow.
Yeah.
She's in the video. And then inside the house where one of the elevators is, there's all this really cool blown glass that looks like fire. And there's a part in that where that part of that inside of that house is filmed. But the house that's the storage house next door, when I'm in the room with the red chair and the candle, that's in
the one where you shake your head all weird and crap.
That's my friend Aaron, whose head does all that.
Oh, I thought that was you.
I don't think that's me. I think it's my buddy Aaron. I have to look at it again. But the beginning where I go stuck inside these four walls and I'm in this chair.
Yeah.
That's there's like white carpet. That's the living room that doesn't have any more. I think we might have moved a piece of furniture out. So that's in like the kind of storage house next door. It's massive. I mean, I wish I lived in a house half that size.
Oh yeah.
But that all that was shot at my friend's one house, and then there's a video for So the apology video. Okay, talk.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I got you.
There you go. That wasn't too hard, right?
That was really easy.
That was easy.
We're talking and we're like, ah!
Native American.
See, I got all this ink, so everybody thinks I'm Polynesian or Hawaiian, but no, I'm 100% Mexican, bro.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, because your skin, like your face, like you look very youthful, like a baby face. You have a baby.
It's the lights, man. It's the lights. Trust me.
Let's see. Where is that going? That is going. All right.
Where are we? Are we in your bedroom?
No, I'm in my living room.
I was going to say, we can't be meeting like that, bro.